All right, we're here with Jeff Gibbard, and gonna get into some. We're gonna get into marketing. We're gonna get into leadership. We're gonna get into what he calls superhero. But we got to get into the origin of things. Real quick, tell us about yourself. Where you're originally from, New York. I know you live in Philly now. We said in the pregame, but tell us about what your mom and dad did for a living. I like to find out the algorithm what built you. Go ahead.
Oh, man, we share so many passions in this. On my podcast, I do a lot of like breaking down people's origin story. That's the whole superhero thing, the origin story. So yeah, man, grew up in New York, Long Island, specifically. A little shame to admit that, but whatever. Grew up in the suburbs. Mom and dad, they split when I was 11. They got remarried. Learned a lot about leadership from that. Story I tell a lot is that on my last day of high school, my mom got into a catastrophic car accident, and nearly died. And that was a moment in resilience. So between the divorce and the car accident, there were some of the things that kind of put me in a constant state of like hypervigilance and like, seize the day, make the most of your life. You never know what's going to happen because stuff just can kind of happen. What else? Moved to Philly in 1998 to go to school, was a film major. Used to want to be a professional basketball player before that when I was 13. So that was my first like real career aspiration. Then when that didn't work out, wanted to be a filmmaker. So that's what I came to school for. It was just a weird time to be in film school. So I got into photography and being a 20 something, I thought I'm going to travel around the world and take pictures of half naked women in swimsuits. Cause that was obviously an early 20 something guy kind of thought. Really glad that didn't wind up being my career. And then I was waiting for a long time, started a personal chef service. And long story short, went back, got my MBA, came out, had a job, got fired, started an agency. And that catches
The
us up to
marketing
2010.
agency.
Yeah, it catches up to about 2011 right there.
Well, let's talk about, you're 20 something and you're traveling around the world and you're taking pictures of half naked women. What countries did you go to? I'm just curious.
Oh, I
Like
didn't
how far did I?
actually do that. I
Oh, you didn't do
wanted
that.
to do that. No,
Oh,
that was
we
just
all want
my,
to do that when we're in
I
our
was a
20s.
waiter. And that was my, I was like, oh, I will start this photography. I have a photography card. I wrote my name on it.
Oh.
No, I didn't actually do that. That was my, I wanted like Maxim and FHM and Sports Illustrated were all like really big at that point. It was like
Yeah.
kind of like peak male magazine, non X-rated magazines, but like peak male magazine time at that point. I was like, these photographers probably have the life. I mean, they're on all these beaches, they're in Ibiza, they're in like, the Mediterranean beaches, they're in Hawaii. Like, this seems great. And all I have to do all day is point this camera at this beautiful woman. Like, seems like a dream job. And that was at the point where I didn't realize that when my dad said you can do anything you want if you set your mind to it and find something you love to do or you'll never work a day in your life, I didn't realize that that actually was going to require so much more work than just actually willing it and wishing it.
Talk about how the incipient stages, how you get into your marketing agency. Like, how did you have the insight to do that? What made you think that you could accomplish that? Like, what, how did that start?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, and the way you framed it, I think, is really interesting, and it's also timely, given that at the time of this recording, the big conversation online is about Threads.
Yes. Yeah.
So here's
Real
basically
quick, for
how,
people that don't know,
yeah,
Threads is now the new Twitter. It's competing for Twitter, and
owned
it's
by Instagram
yeah,
slash
it's a
Facebook.
Mark Zuckerberg,
I could talk so much about
and
this particular app, but.
just before we talked, I don't know if you see that now. Elon Musk says that he wants to sue, possibly sue Zuckerberg for infringing on certain aspects and poaching certain people. That we're working at Twitter. It's an interesting, I don't, it's a dynamic that's going on right now between that.
It's basically tech has become reality TV. I mean, it's ridiculous. So here's kind of how this happened is that so I was a waiter. Things weren't like I didn't see a big bright future in being a waiter. And I'm in my mid 20s, and I decided to go back and get my MBA. And when I came out of my MBA, it was 2007, 2008 when I got my MBA, and I came out just as Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn were all kind of starting to hit their stride. And I didn't look at it and see opportunity like. In the same way that people are jumping on NFTs and AI right now, it wasn't like I was like, oh, a gold rush. Let me get in on that. The reason I actually got into it is that I believed that these technologies had the potential to democratize our world, to open things up, to allow us to see past the things that made us different, find communities of interest, and find ways to build a kinder, safer world. I really believed it naively that it was going to bring us closer together and make the world a better place. So I wanted to get in on that. And I saw it as an opportunity because it also it presented an opportunity for business to actually change because there was sort of a forced transparency that came along with social media, where all of a sudden customers had a voice where they didn't before. And people inside of the company, the employees, they had a voice where they never did before. So the reason I jumped on it was twofold. One, huge, I saw a huge opportunity I was really interested in, right? So I was like, this seems cool. Technology, I'm good with that. People, I'm good with that. But the other side of it was, in my MBA, it was all finance. It was all accounting. It was all economics. And it was like all of these topics that I was like, what am I going to do with any of this stuff? Because I'm not actually good at it. So I needed all this help with my accounting and my finance. But when it came to like organizational behavior and culture and leadership and marketing and sales, I was fine. I can get up in front of the class and talk all day. Meanwhile, there are people that were like accountants that were like, I just would rather stay behind my computer. So I saw it as like, if I'm going to come out and go into the world of business, which I had never been in before, where am I going to be able to get a foot in? And I thought marketing was going to be a good place to do that. So I ran with social media. I was right at the beginning. And I said, if I can run faster than anybody else, if I can learn more about this, if I can immerse myself in it, I can try things, use myself as a guinea pig. If I can do this better than anybody else, we're all at the starting line. I just got to run faster. Mm-hmm. So that's what I tried to do, and worked in a consultancy for about 2 years, left there, went to a PR firm, got fired. Then I started my agency.
You learned a lot at the PR firm, obviously, right?
No. I learned that I hated PR, and I learned that I cannot have a boss. That's what I learned.
Yeah. Well, let's get into like, what are some of the things that, you know, how long did you have the agency for?
So I had the agency for 7 years. It got acquired by a larger agency. And then a year and a half later I left.
Okay. Does it take a year and a half for you to stay on? They made you stay on for a year and a half, or did you want to exit right away? Or
no, it was more like we had these big dreams of like merging our companies and building this Uber mega agency, but culturally it wasn't a great fit. There were a lot of problems that just didn't work out, right? It's like sort of like, you know, I'm on my second marriage. I wouldn't consider my first marriage a failure because I learned a lot from it. I don't consider the merger a failure. It was a great point in my life for me to do that. And then it gave me a clean break from marketing because I left marketing basically after I left social media after that. And I had been growing really tired and weary since, you know, 2014, roughly 2015, social media started to turn and it became this place where it wasn't like finding amazing people that you can connect with and like this kumbaya spirit. All of a sudden it was just rage. It was just rage and toxicity and like vitriol. And it just became not fun to work in. And I saw that, you know, the impact wasn't there. I was trying to help these companies to like really embrace it. And they were very much like, well, how can we just turn a profit quickly on this? So like the luster wore off of the dream. So they acquired my agency. We thought it was going to be a big thing. Wasn't a good fit. And we parted ways and I took 6 months off and tried to like find myself and figure out like, what do I really want to do now? I've done this for 10 years. What do I want to do now?
What year was that?
So I left in 2018, I think it was. It was 2018.
So
2017, 2018, 2018.
So at that time, yeah, compared to now, before we move on, what would you say are, there's personal branding and then there's business branding. You know, mm-hmm, you got your personal brand, you're just trying to promote yourself. And then you're also trying to promote, let's say, a business. They're two totally different things.
Yep.
They come to you. You're not coming to you now, but let's say 2018. And also today, what are some of the things that really, you know, attract a big following? What's the content look like? What's the journey look like? I know that, you know, that it's niche-y. There's a rhythm. There's consistency. But what's the other je ne sais quoi that really hits, you know, nowadays? And also, you know, some things that are tried and true and evergreen. You know, what are some of those bullet points, you know, would you say? It'd be silly not to ask that question.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't do much in marketing these days outside of marketing my various ventures and things I'm doing, but I still, I work with a lot of agencies. So I'm in that world a lot and I still pay attention to everything that's going on. And I would say that the world of like building a following and marketing and like what it looks like today, whether you're a business or whether you're a person, I would say there's kind of like two things that are happening simultaneously. On the one hand, there's just stupid luck. There's being a celebrity. There's, you know, just timing, like, oh, this just happened to be the right time, the right place and everything. So that's kind of like you can't really count on it. And I think as a podcaster, you probably innately understand this because, you know, you have a lot of episodes on your podcast. You've been podcasting, it looks like, you know, similar length of time as me, right? Kim Kardashian decides to start a podcast tomorrow. She's crushing your numbers, dude. Like day one. So it's the same thing on like Instagram and Threads or anything. You just cannot escape the weight of the celebrity following that's out there. So you have to compete with that. So that's the first thing. I would say if you're looking at like, well, how do you actually stand a chance? There's a lot of factors, right? Like there's playing the algorithm game. There's understanding what content is currently working and favored by the algorithm or that people are responding to. So you kind of got to watch the trends, see the tea leaves as they fall. I've taken a different approach personally, because I think you can definitely like niche down and you can like speak to a target audience and have a set of content pillars. And that's definitely what I would advise someone to do. But what I do is I talk about the stuff that's interesting to me and I write about the things that matter to me. And I talk to people that resonates with. And I'm at the point now in my career where there was a time where I chased the following. And I was up at like 26,000 followers on Twitter at one point. And again, there's a lot of gamification that goes into that nonsense. So like, don't buy the hype. But I've found that now having, you know, 20, 25 people to talk to can be infinitely more valuable than a gigantic number with a K after it. Because if those people don't care about what they just follow for, you know, the and the entertainment value of it or the spectacle of it, what's the point? And so there's a lot of people that are out there trying to attract attention when I think they should be out there trying to attract respect. You should be looking to be a person of value out there so that people want to follow you for the right reasons, rather than adjusting who you are and trying to be this chameleon to be what the audience wants. Don't lose yourself. Find yourself and then go out there and be that person. And then when you develop a following after that, at least you know that you don't have to put on false appearances. You don't have to pretend. You know, and we see all these Instagrammers, these influencers that like come out and they're like, I was depressed for like 8 years trying to get this one photo on the beach with my boyfriend. And like, you know, now I'm just depressed and I quit Instagram. What's the point of it all? You know?
Right, right. Yeah, that's the other thing. And if you don't have the engagement or then it's really not, you know, I think I've been a member of Threads for about 11 hours now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I saw it yesterday and I got like a couple hundred followers already, but there's like, I put up some posts and I only got like a couple likes. I was like, what, these people are just following, but there's no true engagement. And I was like, what's the point?
Well, they stack the deck against you, right? So like, what's going to happen here? This is what's going to happen. This is the playbook. And I'm amazed to see that people are on Threads right now. Like, oh, this is it. This is going to be the thing. I've watched this play out time and time again. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to release it. They're going to juice up your engagement. They're going to make sure that people see your stuff. They're just going to do everything they can to get you coming back, get you hooked on it. There's that red notification. You're going to get the dings. You're going to be like, oh, this is it. Dopamine rush. And I know I have ADHD. I love a dopamine rush. Well, what's going to happen is they're going to get you hooked and then they're going to start to taper it off and you're going to be chasing the dragon all day, trying to get that rush back of people liking your stuff, mentioning your stuff, commenting on your stuff. And then eventually you're going to realize that there's no point to the whole thing and you're wasting a whole bunch of time. You could have been building something. But that's what they do time and time again, is that they kind of get you hooked and then they start to take away. I mean, look it is, especially Facebook. They do this all the time because they keep adjusting the algorithm. Look what they did with the pages. They're like, free pages for businesses. It's going to be great. You market your business. And they were like, we're going to just drop the reach a little bit, 20%. Now, all of a sudden, it's like you literally will not reach anybody unless you pay for it. Like maybe like three people. That's what's coming. And I don't know why people don't see it. It's a pattern that's played out time and time again.
Well, let's talk about a brand for a business.
Yeah.
Totally different animal because you can kind of pay to play, but the content has to be sticky still. Your commercials or whatever. Let's say you're branding. We have a widget that's coming out next year. Mm-hmm. A whole company, you know, outdoor related product. So we're going to be able to have exposure. But then again, I'm thinking that the content of what our 30, 60, 90 second spots are going to have to be, it's going to have to resonate with that audience. It's funny, sensationalistic, whatever. What are the other aspects that we really need to kind of like really be cognitive of to make this happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think everything is a combination of inform and entertain. I mean, I think that's ultimately the two axes that you're playing on, and you kind of dial up each depending upon your brand, right? So we've kind of said in passing the word brand a couple times. I do a lot of work still in brand. I don't do a lot in marketing. I do a lot in brand, and I see them as very different things. Brand is your North Star. It defines what color and what format and layout your terms of service are. It's how you answer the phone. It's the clothes that you wear. It's everything is a signal that cumulatively comes together to tell a story in people's minds about who you are, what you are. And a lot of it comes down to language. What are the words that you use? What is the way that you convey those words? So I see a lot of companies, and every Super Bowl, we see this, companies that go out there and they're like, we're going to be quirky and funny. And it's like, that's not your brand. You're a funeral home, right? Like, so you have to match the tone of the content to who you are. And then there's a lot of that other stuff out there. It's like the best advice out there, right? So like, what's the best time to post on Twitter or Facebook? Well, I don't know. I guess it depends. Do you run a breakfast shop or do you sell insomnia medication? Because it's going to be different answers there. So it's about really understanding who you are, who you serve, and what it is that they're looking for, that at the same time is something you want to do, right? Like, just because your clientele want you to do silly TikTok dances doesn't mean you have to. It just means that now you know something about your audience. Maybe they want something else, or maybe you're in the wrong market if that's not something you want to do. So I've always been very much about congruency between who you are and what people are looking for. So for me, I'm very like straightforward, to the point about stuff. Like, I talk about, you know, you need to use your powers for good. You have to, as a business, you have to be able to, Aubrey.
Cute little daughter back there. There you go. Little kid there. This is really nice. Real quick interlude.
Yeah.
Family Guy. Nobody can see the video. He's got a nice little, his daughter's tent back there. His kids are walking around, you know, you got your little gaming chair. You're sitting in there. It's nice.
Oh, thanks, right, man. Did you notice it's a Spider-Man chair?
I did.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, Marvel.
But anyway, I guess that's just my point of it is, like, whatever your business is, you got to figure out, are you gonna inform people? Are you gonna entertain people? Are you gonna do both? And I'm a big fan of Marcus Sheridan. He's known as the sales lion by some, but he wrote a book, They Ask, You Answer, I think is the name of his book. But he made his bread and butter running a pool company basically just by writing blog posts that answer people's questions about pools. And I think if you can remove uncertainty for people, that's one big thing. But the other big thing is, like, what's the kind of relationship that they're looking for? You know, what's the thing that you can do that nobody else can do? What's the thing that they can only get from you that they can't get elsewhere? So there's just a lot of things there, but ultimately it comes down to, like, what's your brand and how can you match your content and what you're putting out there for them so that it matches what it is with their expectations and what you're good at.
That's good stuff. Okay. Now you move on to doing the marketing agency, you take some time off, and then you got into, sounds like a leadership role. And everything I see now, all the last several episodes of the podcast, leadership this, leadership that.
Yeah.
I mean, what does it look like? What you're doing now? Well, that's what you, when you went from the marketing agency to what you do now, that's what you progressed into, or was there something else in between that?
Yeah. So kind of what happened was, is that when I came out of the marketing agency, I said, what do I actually do well? Like, what did I do well in that whole thing? Like, was it that I was the best at Facebook? No. I found that, I needed to do like a little bit of soul searching. So what I did was I came home and I talked to my wife and she was like, take some time. Like, I got it. I'll protect the family. Like, I got the money to cover us for a bit. So like, go figure out what you want to do. You've never taken time off. So I went, I did some soul searching. And when I talked to her, she was like, hey, you should do something with superheroes. Like, you love superheroes and like, you're so passionate about it. And it's like, so part of your, like, who you are, like, you should probably do something with that. And I was like, that's silly. I was like, that's a great idea, but it's like really silly. And I don't know if I could do that because this is business. People aren't going to take me seriously. I love you. I'm going to go and talk to some of my author and speaker friends who are consultants and coaches. I'm just going to pick their brains for a little bit. So I did that. I called a bunch of my friends who are speakers and authors and consultants and coaches, solopreneurs. And what came up time and time again was superheroes and superpowers and being superhuman and all these different things. And I had to go back, tail between my legs. And I was like, you know what? You actually called this way before anybody else. Mm-hmm. You're right. So what I realized was a couple of things. I have roughly 3 or 4 skills. I think I'm a pretty decent writer, but I'm a great strategist. I can connect the dots and see patterns. So like, I'm very good at being able to assess a situation and find a pattern in it. So consulting, coaching, really helpful there, and generally based in strategy. But the other thing is I'm obsessed with growth, with the ability, me personally, like, I'm obsessive about my own growth. I'm always learning. I'm taking courses. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm reading at like an exceptional clip, because I'm always trying to level up and get to the next thing. It's how I grew my agency. And it's the only way I survived, was like, I just was constantly learning to do the next thing. Okay, how to pitch, how to sell, how to market better, how to run Facebook ads, how to Google Analytics, SEO, like all of it was just a product of soaking in information. So I realized that growth and really becoming superhuman was my other thing. And then the third thing that I really got jazzed out of was the part that I loved about working in the agency that I ran and then the agency that I became a part of was being in a leadership role, was growing and developing people on my team, finding what their unique ability was, bringing it out of them, encouraging them, getting behind them and pushing, you know, like a fullback behind Jalen Hurts at the goal line, 4th and 1, really good. Those were the three things: strategy, growth, and leadership. So I wrote a book on leadership called The Lovable Leader. That was kind of my way of expressing the leadership piece. I started a company called the Superhero Institute, which is a coaching certification program. So it's teaching coaches the superhero methodology, like how to grow and become superhuman, and then apply that to becoming a superhero. And then on the strategy side of things, that kind of strangely morphed into a whole bunch of different businesses that I have going on right now. So I have like a coaching and consulting, and then I also have a productivity consulting firm that I have a partner with. And I also do keynote speaking. So that's kind of how everything shook out, was those are the three skills that I kind of run with. And then I would say brand kind of fits somewhere in there, because it kind of touches leadership. It kind of touches superheroism. It kind of touches strategy. So kind of it's all three.
All right. Bullet points. Let's go through the bullet points of, you know, superhero leadership, time management, because I think time management is probably the, you know, once you get these achievers going, it's like, how are you going to manage the time? Everybody's got 24 hours. I think that's the biggest one. What do you do? What do you do to, you know, and you say you got the ADHD, you know, I take it with a grain of salt. I learned that as an adult. They said I had that. I was put in a special school when I was a kid. So I said, okay, maybe this makes sense. Then I started looking at all the boxes and I check a lot of those boxes. Why, the reason why I bring that up is because you say you have the same thing and you know, strategies are a strong point. So how do you take the time and maximize that, not deviate, stay focused, juice as much as you can out of the two, when it's 2:40 in the afternoon and you know, you really want to execute more and you got more set out to do, you know, let's go through the bullet points of what this looks like.
Yeah, this is a good topic. I'm glad that you brought this up, because I love my neurodivergent people out there. Like, we have had it rough for so many years, not being recognized, not acknowledged, not even, you know, diagnosed properly. Like, we've just been out there like in the shadows trying to just survive. And we all came through. If you get to my age, like so many of the people late diagnosed, like full of trauma from this, right? So I love talking about this, because you people out there that are like me, ADHD or autism or both like me, you're okay. You're enough. You're great. So let's talk about some of the strategies. So ADHD, time, not a good blend. So there's everything wrong with my perception of time. One, can't perceive time. Like, everything I always describe to people as, time for me is now or not now. Those are the only two times that exist. Every other time that is not right now is not now. So 5 minutes in the future and 5 hours in the future are roughly the same distance in my perception. So I live and die by my calendar. I'm like Ron Burgundy with the teleprompter. I go where my calendar tells me, and I am routinely checking. It's open all day. So, and my family knows, and my business partner knows, and people that work with me know, if it is not on my calendar, it does not exist. So I externalize almost all perceptions of time. I have clocks everywhere. So that's one huge thing, is just the perception of time is a big one. So I have time blindness, which is that I can start a task and I can say, I'm going to do this for like a half an hour more. And then it'll be 3:30 in the morning. And I'm like, how did 8 hours go by? So this is a blend of like hyper-focus and time blindness. I can get into a task and I can not even get up to eat, pee, drink water, just straight through. So time becomes a big issue there. So I guess I would say that, just to sum up as best as I can, how to hack the time thing as an ADHD person is, one, you have to externalize everything as much as possible. You can't keep it in your brain. It's just not gonna, there's no RAM. It's a supercomputer with no RAM. So externalize, have a calendar, have task lists. And then the other thing is, you have to hack your attention. So you talked about, like, how do you not like get up and go like, thing. You got to learn like what your thing is. So for me, I discovered, have you ever heard of the Pomodoro technique?
No.
So Pomodoro technique is this thing where you do 20 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 20 minutes on, 5 minutes off. It's like a thing where you work for 20 minutes and you take a 5 minute break and 20 minutes on. So what I found is that that technique is stupid and I don't like it and it doesn't work for me. So what I do is I turn on the Pomodoro timer. And then when the alarm goes off that says take a 5-minute break, I just don't ignore, I just ignore it and I just keep going. So the problem with doing laundry, for instance, is starting doing laundry. It's not doing laundry because once you're in the momentum, it's fine. It's starting. So what I tend to do is try and find ways to trigger flow, trigger hyperfocus. And I do that with a variety of different hacks that I use. I also listen to an app called Brain FM every day.
What's Brain FM?
Brain.fm is like lyricless, lo-fi, chill kind of music. They have music for focus. They have music for chilling out, for sleep, for meditation. But I use the focus one literally every day. And they have, oh my, I'm on a 41-day streak right now.
Dude, I'm writing that down.
Yeah, I'm on a 41-week streak right now.
Send me that in the link.
I'll send you the link afterwards. I swear by it. Since I discovered it, I have listened to it every week since I've discovered it. Yeah. And one of the really cool things is that they have neural tuning on it. So you can go high, medium, or low. So if you're like, I'm having a real distracted day, you click it up to high neural tuning. Mm-hmm. And 5 minutes in, dude, you're just like locked in.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'm huge on music. How you manage your schedule is really big, just for your own energy, for your own focus, your ability to get stuff done, managing your schedule, externalizing everything. I like music with no lyrics, but you got to find your own hacks because there's no way around this. Like it's the way your brain's wired. So it's like, you just got to find the thing that works for you. I found a bunch that work for me, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's not on my Calendly calendar, and I've had troubles like, somebody has said, look, we want you on our podcast, and they'll send me their calendar link. I'm like, oh God, I don't think that's going to work for me. And I'm like, yeah. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to be high maintenance, but can you do my calendar? Because if it's not on mine, I've flaked too much in the past where I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you.
You feel me. You get it.
I feel you, man. Like, so I have a productivity consulting firm and I have ADHD. So like do the math. I've had to learn how to do stuff. Right. Yeah. So I've been on a 10-year, basically like productivity bender to try and understand how to rein in the chaos. And this was unmedicated for 10 of those years. I recently started taking medication irregularly, like every once in a while, but it was largely unmedicated for that time. And I had to figure out all of these different methods to be able to keep track of the things I had to do, keep track of the timelines that they're supposed to be on, keep track of where I'm supposed to be, how long things take. So I've had to find a lot of those different hacks, but I don't know. Everybody's different, right? You meet one ADHD person, you've met one ADHD person.
Yeah. I've never taken any medication, cause I'm like, that's my journey. But I just basically, I do drink coffee sometimes strategically. Mm-hmm. I know I need to whether I perform or whether I need to, really do a lot of work and concentrate really heavy. And the coffee really does work if I use it sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also something else that I had a doctor on the show and Shishandra. There's an element called Shishandra.
Okay.
I forgot
what that is.
It's a fruit or a berry or the root or I forgot what I think it's a root. My youngest daughter, they say she's got the ADHD and I gave her that, problem is with these kids, you're lucky you got a diet. You're lucky. I hate to say diagnosis, but at least you got a message of what you might be have a tendency to do.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, Dad, this tastes terrible. I'm like, well, I don't know, man. Sometimes you got to do, I'm a Generation X guy. You got to do shit you don't want to do sometimes,
Yeah. Yeah.
But I digress.
I'll give you two more on that real quick. And we don't have to go too far down this rabbit hole, but two other things I've attempted and have had great success with. And this is like used sparingly. But I can tell you, if you have a day where you're like, I absolutely need to be locked in and I need to crush some work, level 3 nicotine patch. That's the lowest level nicotine patch. So you ever read or watch Sherlock Holmes?
No.
So Sherlock Holmes,
I know of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. So Sherlock Holmes basically in the books, as far as I understand, basically was constantly smoking tobacco of some sort or doing anything nicotine related and cocaine. So put the cocaine to the side and forget about that. But nicotine is a cognitive enhancer. So you can slap on a nicotine patch and you don't even have to wear it the full day, but the jolt of focus and sharpness, the mental sharpness it will give you, it'll set you on a path to hyperfocus and you will absolutely crush some work. So I only do this maybe once every 3 to 6 months. when I'm like, I gotta, like, I need to like finish three projects this weekend.
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing. The other thing that I had tested out and tried out was, and I don't know if this was super helpful necessarily for focus, but it was really good for creative thinking and sort of directing the ADHD mind, was microdosing. So I microdosed LSD. They're like very, very, very tiny. And I did like a 1 month run of that where it was like two or three times a week. And
what
that
about
was
ayahuasca.
I would absolutely go do an ayahuasca trip, but I got two kids now and a mortgage. So I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to do that, but I'm fascinated by it and I'm interested in it.
What about healthy? I'm a healthy guy. So like, I'm always trying to like, I do the coffee. I try the Shishandra. I still got a whole thing in my pantry. I got to like, you know, use that. I keep on forgetting. Now, what other, as far as on a healthy tip, any other suggestions?
I wouldn't say I'm the world's healthiest dude right now. I mean, I'm not super unhealthy, but you know, I don't know if I'm the guy.
Ooh, I got one for you.
I will say that if you have a friend that has ADHD, or if you have ADHD, go drink some water. If you have a friend that has ADHD and you're near them, bring them a glass of water because they've likely forgotten. I do not drink nearly as much water as I should. And this is like a classic ADHD thing.
Water's helped me. I do force myself to drink a huge thing of water in the morning. I drink water, and that does help. You know what really helps me also is that when I feel that, because there's a dopamine drop and you're not productive. And then what I do is, because I run a company, so I was sedentary, or we're doing podcasts, you're sedentary, is that you, or before you have an interview, I'll try, you know, on every, you know, at least on the hour, I do 30 to 40 jumping jacks to really pump up the dopamine because it drops and you can't concentrate.
Can I give you like a booster for that?
Yeah.
All right. So one of the things that really helps me daily, so I hate mornings, hate mornings. I'm a night owl, but I have to get up because I got kids. But every morning I have a habit stack. I'm a big fan of learning about habits. So I've read Atomic Habits, Tiny Habits by BJ Fogg, a little bit of The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. But so I look a lot into the science of habits, and I was a big fan of BJ Fogg's Tiny Habits. And he talks about the idea of like making a habit really small, like making it really easy to do a thing. Like he had an example in his book, like floss one tooth, right? Like so that you're just doing the one thing and you're building the habit, right? So small habit, first thing. Second thing, in the book Atomic Habits, he talks about stacking habits. So like after I do this, then I do this, then I do this. So it kind of creates a momentum. So I do this in the morning with my day. I start, I get up. First thing I do is I put my feet on the other side of the bed. Like I take my feet off the bed and I say, it's going to be a great day today. It's called the Maui Habit in Tiny Habits. I get up, I make the bed. After I make the bed, I do, my habit is to do 5 pushups. I usually do more. Then I do 5 squats. I usually do more. After that, I go into the bathroom. I weigh myself. After I weigh myself, I brush my teeth. After I brush my teeth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I have this stack of maybe 7 things. So the reason I bring that up is because doing the 30 jumping jacks is dope. But if you can track those habits, you also get the dopamine of marking off that you did a thing. So I've heard that Michael Phelps did something like this, that before he ever got in the pool, he had like 15 or 20 small wins that he did. He would get up, he would brush his teeth, he would, you know, take 10 deep breaths, he would this, he would that. And by the time he got in the pool, he had about 20 things that he already accomplished. He's in a winning spirit, man. He's feeling good. He's got momentum. So I would say for that habit of yours, if you could do something where you say, okay, before the thing, you're going to do 30 jumping jacks, make it 2 sets of 15 and make it 2 separate habits you get to mark off. Then in between them, take a gigantic swig of water from your favorite water bottle. I'm a big fan of, I have 2 of these, and these are the only water bottles I drink from. They're like the Gatorade squeeze ones.
Yeah.
Cause you can just fire a bunch of water in your mouth so I can get it out of the way. So put water in between. Right. And then maybe say an affirmation or something. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up, but you give yourself like 5 or 6 things in a row. They take the same amount of time to do, basically. They're really small things, but you give yourself 5 or 6 of them. You get the dopamine of marking each of those off, and you get the dopamine of the exercise and this and that. So like you could stack it up and really, really take that to the next level.
Yeah. I'm aware of that. There's I forgot the name of the general, the Marine Corps sergeant or whatever, that talked about making your bed every morning.
You Jocko.
What is it? No, Jocko, not Jocko. There's a whole thing about the older guy is not Jocko. Guy says, you know, making your bed, you know, it's the reason why it's so important to make your bed. It goes with this whole thing. And it's basically, you want to try to get these mini accomplishments to build up that momentum the sense of accomplishment, which is a, which gives you that dopamine rush as well.
Yep.
And that's the thing, you know, sometimes, you know, when you are have that day and you feel like I'm not, you know, oh, I sat on TikTok a little too longer. I wasn't sitting on TikTok to post something. I was sitting on it because I got caught in social quicksand, you know. Yeah. And then you got to say, look, man, you got to do something right now, even small, to get something of, you know, your accomplishments in, so you can get that momentum back. And that's a huge thing. As far as, you know, do you have any methodologies that you do as far as like, you know, triple time, quadruple time, you're doing, you know, so, you know, multitasking. And as far as, you know, what kind of processes have you kind of created, any processes for yourself that have shaved the minutes off of hours, things like that? This is, to me, this is like what separates the different types of leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my philosophy on things is that you have to find your own internal tempo and roll with that, right? So whatever that is, roll with your internal tempo. And I'll give you an example of that in a minute. The other thing, and this relates to both what we're talking about now and what we were just talking about, is giving yourself grace for failure or for not being perfect. And it's something that I work really hard on, because it's really hard for me, because I have a lot of plans and a lot of ambitions. So sitting on TikTok too long can make me feel pretty crappy, or playing video games for too long. But I also have found that it's hard to be creative when you don't give yourself space to rest. And it's also hard to celebrate your wins when you don't give yourself space to be human, where like you have these times where you're not the best parent, or where you're not the best husband, or where you're not, you know, the best, you didn't show up at that meeting the way you normally do. Like, if you hold yourself to a standard that you're always going to show up and you're always going to do it, there are people that have that, like the mama mentality nonsense. And like, there's people that are about that. I'm not about that. Like, I think we have to give each other more space and more grace. And I think for me, at least, it's always easier to give other people space and grace than it is to give myself. But that's the one that I work on, is like trying to be gentle with myself in those times where I do mess up. But as far as the internal tempo thing, which is the other side of it, which is, and these two kind of go hand in hand, I think we internalize a lot of expectations of what we're supposed to do, what we should do, how we're supposed to be, right? And I had a hard time in school reading books, for instance. And what I came to find out later in life was there were several problems with the reasons why I had trouble. I could read perfectly fine. In fact, I read, when I did a speed reading course, by the end of the course, I was up at between 750 and 1,000 words a minute. So like, I can read very, very fast. The problem was everything was moving too slow, and they weren't the books I wanted to read. It was all fiction books. I got lost. I forgot who characters were because I couldn't see their faces. ADHD, I'd get 3 pages later. I was like, what did I just read? And I had to, and we had to read them for assignments, like a chapter a week or something like that. That's not how I roll. Like, I'm all or nothing. So when I listen to my audiobooks and I listen to podcasts, I'm minimum listening at 2x minimum. And that's not because I'm like a productivity junkie that's like trying to get more in. I literally just cannot go slower. The slow makes me want, it's like sitting in traffic. Have you ever listened to an audiobook at 1x? I want to jump out of my car. So yeah, no. So I listen to,
I'm 1.5, you know, I try to keep it at 1.5, you know, but I some of them, like, it depends on the thing. I'll go 2x. It depends
on the narrator.
Yeah. But it's, I get the same thing. I'm like, let's go. Come on. I gotta go.
Get to it. yeah. So like, I like to drink from the fire hose, and that's the speed that I want to be going at. So that's the speed that I do things at. I listen to my books fast. I watch my videos fast. I want to get it done because I want to get onto the next thing. And I'm able to process it better at that higher speed than I am at the slower speed, because my mind doesn't wander. I have to be just at the point where it's like, I cannot look away, or I can't pay attention to something else. It has to be at that speed, because then I'm dialed in.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Where are you at today? What's going on with your, you know, what your projects and what current events that you have going on with you right now?
Big thing that I'm really excited about a bunch of different things, but I would say that the two that are most present for me is that, while I was in, I just went to Hawaii for a wedding and a little vacation, which was really nice. Hawaii, I would love to live there. So if you're listening and you want to move me and my family to Hawaii for some reason, I'm all ears. But while I was there, I got a chance to catch up on a project that I'd been spending a lot of time far behind on, which is that I told you about the Superhero Institute. So the Superhero Institute has gone through a couple different changes over time, and I'd been meaning to update the website and put together the new curriculum, like to start to build out the curriculum and enhance it in the ways that I wanted to. And I just didn't have the time to do it. But I locked up the entire website over the course of that Hawaiian vacation, and I outlined the entire new curriculum. So I'm really excited that I'm making progress on building that out, because it's one of my most exciting projects. The audiobook for Lovable Leader is coming out soon. I just finished up reading all the chapters. I got to do some of the like cleanup and some B-sides and things like that. But then the other thing is I have this podcast network called the Shareable Podcast Network, shareable.fm. And I'm basically just at the point now where I'm able to start bringing more shows onto the network. And it's a podcast network for podcasters. So podcasters who are looking to learn how to get more engagement with their audience, monetize their show, create shareable content. I've said for a long time that the best part about podcasting is that you just get to talk to amazing people. Like here, you and I, honestly, I wouldn't care if anybody listened to this episode. I'd be happy if they do. But for me, like, I just like the fact that like I get to meet you, I get to learn about you, you get to learn about me. We now have a connection. And if there's something that we're working on where we're like, you know, we think we might jive together on it, it's like I could just reach out to Michael and be like, hey, you might like this thing. And I think that is the most, it's the least talked about part of podcasting that I think is the best part of podcasting.
Yeah. Let me, I just talked about this with somebody else last week. And the interesting thing about that is it's different than listening to a podcast when you're doing the podcast. The absorption level, the type of absorption that you have when you're talking to somebody is different, you know, because as you're concentrating in real time, you're really concentrating. If you really care about what the person's saying and you're a good interviewer, you're selflessly involved in them and you're absorbing what they're talking about. Even if you don't, you might not think that you remember something, you know, and say, well, you know, sometimes it'll be like, it's like a good stand-up routine. So they say, what do they talk about? It's like, oh, it was this guy. And like, you can't recall everything, you know, but then I think that your subconscious records better when you interview somebody rather than when you're just listening to the podcast, you know? So
100%. I also think being in it, and I'm curious to get your take on this. I think interviewing people has made me a better human. Like it makes me a better conversationalist. It makes me a more curious person, a more open-minded person. I honestly think everybody should do this. Even if you don't publish it, like you should interview people. It's fascinating to learn about other people, and your format and the way that you run your show is very similar to the way that I do Shareable. And I have this podcast called Rogue where I break down people's superpowers so that we can steal them. So like if you have a particular unique ability, I bring you on the show and then I break it down into a framework so that I can steal it and that my audience can steal it and then they can take it for themselves.
That's
so
cool.
To do that, you actually have to genuinely be curious about how a power works. You got to sit there and be like, oh, tell me more about that. Right. And on Shareable, same thing. Like it's about people's journey. It's about the conflict that they faced. It's about the transformation they've gone through. And you can't do that with scripted questions. So you got to be present. You got to be curious.
Right. I've done personal development since I'm like in my early 20s and doing podcasting is like, that was a great base, but it fast tracked so much. You know, just talking to so many people and different, you know, cause you're just recording. And then it's like, it's almost like, you know, how a computer or how AI learns by, you know, just keep on going through all systems, you know, all scenarios, you know, to where it's just now all these people, you know, you get to learn. And then, so, you know, it's just eons and light years of like, you know, how much you can learn. And sometimes you don't even notice it, you know? So, yeah. And I totally agree with that. It feels like make a better person. You know, especially when you got the ADHD, so you want to concentrate on it, forces you to be a better listener, you know, because if you care about being, you know, having this bandaloupe, a dance, you know, you're here to say what's happening now, and an impulsivity of curiosity, keeping it open for that, for, you know, that's helped out quite a bit. So yeah, I concur.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are some of the things I'm excited about. The Superhero Institute, Shareable Podcast Network. I'm excited about my book, you know, because of, you know, probably because of the ADHD, but also just because I like a lot of stuff. I do a lot of different things and I pursue a lot of interest. And it's funny, when I used to go on podcasts as a guest at the end of the show, you know, it's like that part where you talk about like, where can people find you and this and that. Yeah. And I used to be like, okay, so if you want to find this, you go here. If you want to find this, you can go here. If you want to find this, you can go here. And it got to a point where I felt like, you know, jack of all trades, master of none sort of thing, but also like just information overload. Right. So I've started consolidating and the move to being in the world of superheroism, having that as like my my brand that ties everything together really has tied everything together. Because if you look at everything that I'm doing, the underlying idea behind all of it is I just want a world that's kinder, safer, and more equitable. I want people to be nice to each other. I want people to do work that they love and that they care about. I want people to feel like they're enough and not like, you know, they have to live up to somebody else's expectations. I want us to have more leisure time, all sorts of things like that. But, you know,
I do talk to a lot of people that say that, you know, ADHD or whatever, you know, have a certain personality type. And for me, I plan things in advance. You know, I have like a 5 to 10 to 15, you know. Now I also want to be zen-like. I keep that open, you know. I want to live in the moment. But I do find that a lot of the things that I come true when I plan them and I schedule them.
Yeah.
Do that. Or what do you have planned for your future? I always ask this question.
Yeah, I always try to look out several years and then kind of work my way backward. But I also, I feel like I'm always keeping kind of three time periods in my head. So I have the long after I'm gone timeline. So it's like everything has to be working towards a legacy long after I'm gone. Like the body of work of this life has to mean something. And that's the one that I think about more often than anything else. Because I think when I focus on any sort of near term, like a 3 year, a 5 year, a 1 year, I'm a little bit more self-critical. I tend to get a little bit more like, well, I haven't made enough impact yet. Like no matter what it is, right? I'm just critical and unhappy. But when I think about like the bigger picture, like the life that I'm leading as like long after I'm gone, what does it mean? How do people remember me? I realize I got a lot of time left on the clock. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't have a lot of time left on the clock, but I still got time on the clock. And then I also try to think about, you know, the immediate, like what's coming up now, because everything that's going to happen in the 1 to 3 to 5 year is a product of what I do on a day-to-day basis. And I try to keep consistent and active on different projects and stay focused on my priorities. But the long after I'm gone is also a product of what I do day to day and what I plan for my goals in the near future. So I'm always really thinking about those kind of three goalposts, like what's happening now this week, et cetera, what's going to be happening in the next 2 to 5 years, 10 years. And then what's going to happen long after I'm gone? Like what does my life mean in any of these contexts? What's important in those contexts? So I'm always thinking of those things. Yeah. And I also, you know, I am ADHD, but I also am autistic. So there's a bit of a conflict there between how those two things kind of happen in my brain. It's a bit of a tornado because on the one side, the autistic side of me is very into routines and patterns and fixed ways of doing things. And the ADHD side of me is chaos. It's like a little bit more like wants to, it's like spontaneity versus routine are constantly in conflict for me. And those can sometimes be really challenging because part of me desires to work on a thing and slowly chip away at it and get it done and really like devote my effort to it. But then the other part of me is like, but look at this amazing shiny thing over here. Yeah. And it's like, and then like the other side of me is like, okay, I will work on that. Then we will work on this and we will focus on this. And then look a shiny thing over there. So it's like, it's a bit of a challenge, but hey man, I just keep trying to do things I like. So in any direction that I go, at least I'm doing stuff that I'm interested in.
Well, iron sharpens iron, right? So, you know, that you're putting your processes and what works for you. And it sounds like you've done a dandy job of it. So, and here's that. Yeah. So it seems like you're having fun in your Spider-Man chair. So, all right, here goes that question. Tell everybody how they can find out more about you, about that new website you put together when you're in Hawaii, or tell us more about where everybody can find you.
No, the website I put together in Hawaii is a different thing, but you can find it through this link, which is just jgibbard.com. It's just J, my first letter, Gibbard, G-I-B-B-A-R-D.com, jgibbard.com. It's basically a menu with nested menus. So instead of telling people, go to all these different, you go to the one and you can literally find everything that I'm doing from side projects to content, to how to hire me, to how to contact me, get on my newsletter, all the different things, all in that one place. Go have fun. I do a lot of different stuff. If you don't like one thing, you might like another thing. You'll probably find some things that you're going to know whether or not you do like me. You read my blog, you'll find out you're either like, you're kind of aligned with the way that I'm going or you're just not.
Well, sounds like you're having a good time. I love what you're saying. Jeff Gibbard, thank you so much for sharing. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right, thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.